And now a holiday message from your friends at the American Civil Liberties Union.
Away with a manger, please hide it from view. Remove the menorah and Kwanzaa stuff too. A suit has been filed by the ACLU. If you should display it, you bet we will sue. If you were PC, then we might be okay. Could Mary be played by an Asian who's gay? We think that this Joseph should be Josephine. Why couldn't the three kings be three Swiss drag queens? And for baby Jesus, we think you should try a differently abled small person who's bi. We've one more request, though you might think it strange. The cattle and sheep simply must be free range. We're not anti-virgin, but this suit you'll lose. We'll file to defend Mary's right to choose. And one day your children will have the Lord's care. 'Cause once you're in heaven, no lawyers live there.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is The World is a Battlefield. Jeremy Scahill reveals covert operations unknown to the public and carried out across the globe by men who do not exist on paper and will never appear before Congress. Raising questions about freedom and democracy, war and justice, morality and politics. Terrence McNally is the interviewer, journalist, and radio host. And then later, the U.S. and China strike a climate deal.
And finally, and we've got about three more minutes, how you spent a lot of your time on the ground in Somalia, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, etc., Iraq. But what do you think has happened here at home that has allowed this to take place?
Yeah, that's a powerful question. I sometimes get asked by people, you know, are they going to stick us in FEMA camps? Or, you know, you'll get people that come out of left field with a question about what they think that the government is going to do to them. And I mean, we have very real fears in our society of the government invading our privacy, snooping on our emails, getting deep into, you know, our lives, especially if you're organizing around issues that they don't like. I mean, you know, clearly there are risks. But I often say to people, you know, that I remind them of the line in The Usual Suspects, the movie The Usual Suspects, which is great. Kevin Spacey, you know, playing Kaiser Sose and the whole. But he says the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. And in a way, you know, there's already been a coup of sorts in the United States. And the coup has been that we've been convinced that we actually are free. And that and that we do pose a threat. We, you know, those of us that are speaking out, we don't actually pose much of a threat at all to the powerful. They, you know, you don't need fat guys and cigars behind the scenes telling media outlets what to report anymore. Journalists are pretty much lockstep with the powerful anyway. They hang out together. That's their sort of the culture around them. I think we as a society have been gripped by fear. I think we've been sold a bill of goods that Al-Qaeda represents some kind of existential threat to us. It's not that there aren't people that want to take down airplanes. It's that is not even a fraction of the threat that we face in this country from our own gun violence or traffic accidents.
Unregulated fertilizer factories.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think part of it is that we've been gripped by fear. I also think that when people are struggling economically, how can you ask someone, a mother of three who's working a couple of jobs and is trying to figure out a way to get all of her kids to and from school every day and make sure they're doing the homework? How can we ask her to care about a drone strike in Yemen?
That very thing I said at the very top of the introduction.
I have total sympathy for that position. It's a tough ask. But I do think if we don't, those of us, particularly those of us that have the freedom to do this, if we don't take this on as our issue, it's going to come back around to haunt us. We will look back in decades, I think, and say, wow, we were asleep at the wheel when the popular Democratic constitution law professor, Nobel Peace Prize winner, solidified all of these things that we were so against when Republicans were doing it. And to me, that's a chilling admission. I think that's a challenge for all of us.
And if you were finally 30 seconds, what would you tell listeners to do?
I mean, I think we need to wage our own hearts and minds campaign. I think there should be a moratorium on drone strikes. Even if you think that there are a smarter way of waging war, which I don't, George Ryan abolished the death penalty in Illinois because of the evidence that so many innocent people have been put to death. We need to have a moratorium on the drone strikes and see who's actually been killed. And I believe that if the American people were presented with the names and who these people really were, there would not be support for that policy. And so I think that's something people can actually call on their elected representatives to do. Say, I want to know who we're killing in these wars.
Okay, very good.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Professor Zinn, as you know, after the invasion of Iraq, polls showed that up to 60% of the American people fully believed that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11 and believed that he was closely associated with Al-Qaeda. Even after President Bush, when he was finally put in a corner, admitted there was no connection, polls showed that still 30% of American people believe that. Now, American people aren't stupid. My opinion, but this is a question to you, is the American corporate media at fault here?
Well, there's no question that you're right. No, I agree with you. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. And they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media. Fox Television, CNN, the major newspapers, the major television stations, and the Washington Post, which is a major newspaper, which is supposed to be liberal, admitted some time ago that it had given the American people false information about weapons of mass destruction, that it had gone along and simply conveyed the administration's misinformation about that to the American public. So, no, I agree with you very much that the reason so much of the American public still believes facts which have turned out to be false is because they have had a very bad education by the media. They certainly have had a very bad education in the history of this country and certainly a bad education about what is going on in the world. We need to look for alternative media. I applaud programs like this which give us viewpoints that you will not get on NBC or CBS. I applaud Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! and David Barsamian's Alternative Radio and Pacifica and all those attempts to bring information to the public which it does not get from the corporate media.
We have one last call. Camdenton, Missouri, you're on the air.
Hello, yes. So according to you, in the last 60 years or so, there's a vast conspiracy among all of our legislature, our government, that we're going to do everything wrong and we're going to do everything we can to diminish the United States in everything we do. We don't have a government in Vietnam. We don't have a government in Germany, etc. We help these people. And George Bush, in the last 4 years, has not ruined education and health care and whatever. There is no vast conspiracy to ruin the United States. Are you a communist?
There are two questions there. The second one. No, I'm not communist. I remember the Communist Party and so on. I thought that was a question that left us a long time ago. I believe in a kind of socialism. I believe in democratic socialism. And I believe that the resources of society should be more equally distributed among people. And everybody's entitled to certain basic things. And, you know, you can call that whatever you like, but, you know, I think that would be a good society. I believe in a peaceful world. I don't believe in war. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. And they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media. The American people are not stupid, but they can be misinformed. and they have been misinformed consistently by the corporate media.
Coming up next, the U.S. and China strike a climate deal. The world's two largest greenhouse gas emitters, the United States and China, have forged an agreement to work together to cut their use of climate-disrupting hydrofluorocarbons. Jennifer Morgan, Director of Climate and Energy Programs at the World Resources Institute, joins Steve Curwood to discuss the significance of the deal.
I'm Steve Curwood. The UN has been haggling over rules to address climate change since 1992, but has yet to reach a comprehensive deal. But now the world's two largest emitters, the US and China, have struck an agreement to limit their use of the potent greenhouse gases called hydrofluorocarbons, HFCs. The pact is based on the rules of the Montreal Protocol that governs the gases that destroy the ozone layer. To put this in perspective, we're joined now by Jennifer Morgan, Director of the Climate and Energy Program at the World Resources Institute. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So first off, what exactly are these chemicals and how are they currently being regulated on an international level?
Well, these are chemicals that go into refrigerators and air conditioners, and currently they aren't all that regulated on the international level. They were replacements for CFCs, which people might remember back from the late 80s, which were a main cause of the hole in the ozone layer. These were the replacements for those over time. But now what's been found is that they are very potent greenhouse gas emissions and cause climate change.
So don't make a hole in the ozone layer, but heat up the planet.
Exactly. These are very damaging. They're kind of like super greenhouse gas emissions, 1,000 times more potent than carbon dioxide, which is the main greenhouse gas that comes from the burning of fossil fuel. Small share, but very big impact.
So what exactly have the United States and China agreed to at this point?
Well, the U.S. and China basically have agreed that they're going to work together and that they're going to work under the Montreal Protocol to phase down both the consumption and the production of HFCs. So I think what they're aiming for is to bring other countries along to implement, to agree to, and then implement such a phase out by 2050.
So if China really goes along with this, it would be accepting then binding limits on this particular gas.
Yes, that's part of how the Montreal Protocol works. There's a fund to help give support. It's unclear whether China would get that, but it's basically stepped out from its position with India and is working with the United States on this one.
How significant is it that these two giant polluters are coming to the table in terms of the climate negotiations?
It's very significant that these two players are coming to the table. It builds confidence, I think, of other countries, for the most part, especially in Asia, that they're going to work to find solutions rather than battle it out and things collapse. It's a new era, in a way, for U.S.-China relations on climate, which hopefully will then, you know, build much more transformational change in the future.
How does this rapprochement over HFCs impact the U.N. climate negotiations?
I think it will inspire many, because one of the key worries often of other countries is whether the U.S. and China can work together as the two biggest polluters. So I think it will inspire that. I think it will put pressure on countries that want to work with China, like the EU, to really step it up and have their heads of state engaging the Chinese president as well. But I think it's going to bring a bit of a jitter in a positive way into the climate negotiations, because it shows that international cooperation is really possible.
Now, just recently, a group of countries announced that they are establishing what they call a renewables club to deal with renewable energy issues together. Can you describe that club for me and what it might mean for climate negotiations?
Sure. The German environment minister brought together 10 countries in total, Germany and China and India, South Africa, even the United Arab Emirates, and a couple of European countries, to create this renewables club. And the main goal is to scale up renewables as quickly as possible. Germany clearly is doing this. It's got almost a quarter of its electricity right now from renewable energy. And the goal is really step by step to do that and to look at how they can work together to make that happen. I think for the climate negotiations, it is part of this debate of trying to get more ambition now, because it's recognized that what's currently being implemented around the world is not enough.
What do you make of China and India being invited to the Renewables Club, but not the United States?
It's not that much of a surprise. These countries all have ambitious national policies in place. And that has been proven to be the main thing to drive the buildup of renewables. So these are major players in the global marketplace. And as of yet, the U.S. is lagging behind. So I think it's an indication of that. And then the U.S. needs to put a national policy in place to drive renewables. Then they can join, I think.
Jennifer Morgan is director of the Climate and Energy Program at the World Resources Institute. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
John L. Lewis calls for the ouster of Secretary of the Interior J. A. Krug in 1947.
Certainly, the responsibility for safety in the coal mines covers a long trail, from the miner up through the minor mine officials, to the management of the company, the state legislatures, the inspection force, the reviewing bodies in the state, the Federal Bureau of Mines, and the administrator of coal mines, who stands at the top in this period of governmental seizure with nothing to stop him from making coal mines safe, except his lack of desire to do so. I said that these men at Centralia died through the criminal negligence of J.A. Krug. And I reiterate that statement now. And I shall prove it beyond peradventure at this hearing, if the committee will permit. I have not said that J.A. Krug, by an affirmative act, killed these men. I say that J.A. Krug, by his inaction, has permitted them to die, while he withheld from them succor that it was in his power to give. This isn't a question for revenge. The United Mine Workers is a law-abiding institution. It's not a revolutionary organization. It's against those who promote disobedience to law and hope to achieve their objectives by violence in this country. The United Mine Workers in this country have been fighting the communist new movement since its inception. It isn't a new thing with us. We're Americans. But let me say to you, sir, that this butchery of coal miners and the crude slaughterhouse in this country goes does more to make communistic adherence than anything else in this country. Is it any wonder that there's lamentations in the mining towns of this country? Is it any wonder that there's a spirit of rebellion against this condition manifested now by the memorial services and the prayer to high heaven that's going up from every mining community? Is it any wonder that the widows in the mining camps now are reluctant to see their men go to the mines next week when the memorial period is over? If we must grind up human flesh and bones in the industrial machine that we call modern America, then before God I assert that those who consume the coal and you and I who benefit from that service because we live in comfort, we owe protection to those men first, and we owe the security for their families if they die. I say it, I voice it, I proclaim it, and I care not who in heaven or hell opposes it.
Yeah. That's all, folks.